Channel 1 over on Mr. Gallagher's reel. This is Channel 1 over. Channel 1 over on Mr. Gallagher's reel. This is a visit with Mr. Gallagher on Sunday afternoon, 17th of November, 1968. And this is Channel 1 over. This is Channel 1 over on Mr. Gallagher's reel. Most of the Channel 1 right is I put Mr. Boyd down there. I'm sorry I did it, but I didn't have anywhere else to put it. Now, this is Mr. Gallagher's reel, Channel 1 over. And this is the first long, satisfactory session with Mr. Gallagher. This is a very good one, especially in parts. And this is on Sunday afternoon, the 17th of November, 1968. And this is Channel 1 over on Mr. Gallagher's reel.
They're getting a few tangerines. He's fixing to go to Gainesville. There's some of the children up there. And he's got a daughter-in-law that's going to school up there from Louisiana. And they down there. You know, you teach agriculture up there, don't you, Mr. Miles?
I don't exactly teach up there, Mr. Gallagher. I work up there.
Well,
I do some office work.
Whatever it is, yes, sir.
But
wow, about two or three Saturdays ago, and I couldn't realize that thing was just what it is.
Yeah.
It looks like a little New York out there.
Oh, it's just phenomenal.
You been in there?
Yeah.
The mall out there on Highway 13?
Oh yeah. How does Senator Edwards get time to go to the legislature and all the other things going on?
I don't know. He's just a good mixer, I guess. You know, he didn't run this time, and he automatically went out right after the election here, and he went out. I think it was on a Tuesday, and he got his mail Wednesday, and he had a notice to come serve on the jury. Come serve on the jury.
Somebody
he'd never done before.
Somebody just laying for him.
Yes, they were. And he said he had to go serve. He went out like today, and he got his mail tomorrow, and he had a summons to serve on the jury. And that was about a week ago.
Yeah.
And I saw him in church this morning, and he's quite a busy man, all right, L.K. is.
Yeah.
He's a good fella, too. You
Does
think.
He put in his time at the office down there at Ocala? He's out.
Tallahassee. Oh, you mean in the bank?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't put in much time down there. He's got some good men there. You got that fella, Niblick. He's the cashier then, and they've got some good men under him.
Uh-huh.
L.K. is president of it, and three or four of the doctors out there, they all have stock in it. And and Fred Molliver, he's a Jew out there. He's one of the richest men in Ocala. Fred, just throw that up there. Don't hold it. Just throw it down. And he's about one of the richest men out there. He's one of the big shots in it, too. And you know, they're growing right along, too. That little bank's going right along. I suppose it's somewhere up there in the neighborhood of about $5 million in the pounds.
Mr. Gallagher, what's going to happen to all the poor fellas, little fellas?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. In the next few years, the government is just going to have to take care of about 90% of the people. They're almost doing that now. Because I don't know, they just, a lot of them don't want to work, and there won't be jobs. I don't think the supply of folks, the population is increasing, so. And I think they'll eventually just have to go ahead and take care of all of us, tell you the truth about it.
When you hear about all these big operations, you know, it just makes
the money. You wonder. And, you know, I can't think too deep, I'll be honest with you about it. I just get to thinking sometimes, and I just dismiss it from my mind.
Yeah.
What in the world am I trying to
Well, it looks like the jobs are decreasing, and the population's increasing, and I don't know what they're going to have a job for them.
Well, that's
figure.
What I say about the
That's the figure, right there.
All these big plants.
And
is
here's the thing about automation, that's what I was going to say, just coming in and
generation that made what I always think of as an honest living, where a fellow could go out and work for himself and make a living.
Uh-huh. You know, it's funny, I was in Ocala yesterday, and I went in there to Kennedy's clothing store, about the biggest men's furnishing out there, is where I buy a few clothes I do have, and I told one of the boys, and I said, Jimmy, I said, as soon as I get completely rid of all these little groves that I'm selling now, I said, how about giving me a job in here? He says, can you start this afternoon? I said, no, I don't feel like working this afternoon. He said, how about Monday? I said, no. I said, I don't want to go Monday. And I just more or less kidding. And when I started out, you know what he told me? He said, I'm going to put your name in the pot. He said, we can sure use some help. He said, we can't get any.
Oh, is that right?
That's the truth.
Well, now, what about that?
Now, that's the truth. I said, you wouldn't want no 74-year-old man working for you. But he says, you just, this younger generation just don't want to work.
Don't want to work.
That's the truth.
When did you start in on Orange Growers?
Well, I guess it was 1950. We bought that one down at McIntyre.
That's the first one?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And we bought it and this one right here, you might say, all at the same time. Well, man, John Walker, he's dead now. He was a real estate man down there, Dave. He was old, I believe I told you a while ago, his old man Belk's first cousin. And he sold us this place, and he sold us that grove down there. We bought this from the Richardson boys, Mark and them.
Mm-hmm.
He sold it for them. And then we bought the Belk Grove.
John Walker's
father,
sold it.
That's right. And he died before we ever...
Well, now, John was a real estate man?
His father. John's father. Old man John. John's lawyer, you know.
Oh, yes, yes.
He's representing us in that little sale in Groves, you see. He was our lawyer.
And he handled both of the transactions?
Yes, sir. His daddy did, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. Things are just moving.
And that around 1950?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. October 1950.
Did you have to pay for it as you got it, when you got it?
Well, I paid cash for this right here. Don't mind telling you what I paid for it. There was a boy here, it was a boy in it from Richardson Morris, and he's an old bachelor. He had a note coming up for $2,500, which would automatically pay him out. Well, he couldn't raise the money. So old man Walker came over to Central. We were running a little store there.
Mm-hmm.
And explained it to him. He said, you want to buy it? So we came over here and looked at it, make a long story short.
You and your wife?
Yeah, and so I asked them what they wanted and said they wanted $5,500 for it. So we decided we'd go ahead and buy it. Now, we were still running the little store over there, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought it, and of course, that gave the boy...
50? 50. Prices weren't quite so high, were they?
No, it wasn't like they are now. Now, of course, that gave the boy a chance to save himself, don't you see? He paid the $2,500 lien off and saved himself that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought that one down there.
Oh, he's the one. Who was it? Was it over here? You didn't call his name?
No, I didn't call his name. I can't think of his name. It was kind of a peculiar name.
Yeah.
He was an old bachelor.
Yeah.
He moved from here over here about Windsor somewhere now. I can't think of that boy's name. I see.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of a peculiar fella.
Yeah.
The funny thing about it.
I bet I'd recognize it.
He was an old bachelor. And he had four bedrooms in there already. And why in the world he did this, I'll never know. I thought of it several times. After he moved in here, he still went to work and built on another bedroom around yonder on the back, don't you see?
Yeah.
And he was just here by himself and already had four bedrooms. But they were not all furnished. But he still built another one around there. And he had all kind of old papers, some of them 2 and 3 years older than that. And why he wouldn't build another one, I just don't know. But he did. But
he and John Walker's daddy come over to see you about it?
Yeah, sure did. Uh-huh. That's right. He come over. If somebody hadn't bought it, you understand, the way you get a whole little money, he'd have lost it. Because Maureen, they were going to foreclose on it.
How much land you have here?
38, it's all on the fence.
Well, now, you didn't put these oranges in.
There are some of them. There were some here, but that 62 freeze and the 57 freeze came along and just knocked the pure fool out of them.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, it was just wilderness out there, you might say. So they came back, you know, from the route, and I bought a little... bunch of trees over there from a man at Island Grove. I guess it was maybe $500-$600. I give him $1,000 for it. And we used that to replenish this grove up here, don't you see, in the one down at McIntosh.
Mm-hmm.
And I had
dollar a tree?
No, we paid a little more than that for them. They were great big trees, tell you the truth about it.
Yeah.
And we went ahead and reset it. And then we had another little freeze, if you remember, in 62.
I don't want to interrupt what y'all are doing. I just want to...
Go ahead and talk. I was just enjoying it. Listen.
I just love to...
we both have another one. Went along, but I got a chance to buy that on 301.
Well, now, you didn't have so much. Now, when I talk to you about these things, you know, I like to get the information. It's not just past time.
Because
I've got, you know, sort of things in mind now. But so you didn't have so much in it up here.
No, that's right. We had $5,500 to begin with, and of course, this house, not the house you're looking at now, or that house was, and Lord, we went ahead and done some remodeling, and there was exactly 161 feet of porch from way around yonder to right there. There was exactly 131, and 30 on the other side to around yonder, gave us 161. It would rain.
You mean when you come, there was all that porch there?
Yeah. And every time it would rain, it would just pour, and then I got tired of that. I said, Father, well, let's just pull all that old stuff down and kind of remodel it to where it won't leak so bad. And that's when we did what we got here. But we got more than that in it now. We got these Smith boys up here to do the work, you know, JB and them. And we spent, I don't know how much, to tell you the truth, I've bought $9,000 worth of stuff from Bill Wynn down there at the store. We bought $9,000 from him. Besides what we bought from Hughes and other places, remodeling it. But we made a pretty nice house.
Well, when did you start remodeling? You'd been here some time before you did that.
Yeah, we'd been here, I guess, about 4 years, Mr. Miles, before we decided we'd go ahead and remodel it.
So you done all that before I ever come into this country?
I guess we did, yes, sir.
I come to Gainesville.
I'm about to tell you, it doesn't get cold down here.
Oh, no.
Because it does. You know, the first year we came down here, which was in 36, I had a pretty nice overcoat, came down here from Texas. And, Dave, I could come down here, and I didn't think it'd ever get cold, you know. So I told Raleigh, I said, I believe I'll send this overcoat to my daddy. He was pretty old, living up there in Mississippi. And I bundled that overcoat up and sent it up to my daddy, a good coat. And bless Pat, and when winter came along, I thought about my overcoat, but I never did buy another, to tell you the truth. I don't have a sign of
it. I don't know what I'd do with an overcoat down here now.
I don't ever use one. I was thinking about it. About a year ago, we were coming from church one Sunday night, and right on the side of the post office down there, it was raining. And I looked out there, and I saw something stretched out. I said, you know, that looks like somebody to me. I said, I wonder if somebody got hit. And I hated to get out because it was raining. Well, anyway, I got out, and she put the lights on, and I got out there, and it was an overcoat. I guess you'd call it a trench coat or something like that. It was just right up and down the road. And I picked that thing up. I was kind of afraid to pick it up. And it's a pretty blue coat, and it was wet and it's kind of muddy. I said, well, I know somebody around here lost it. So a few days after that, I was talking to Fred about it. I said, I don't know if anybody's lost one. I inquired around. Never did find out who lost the coat or anything. I imagine somebody maybe out of Gainesville had been fishing, you see. And so Ollie put it through the washing machine. I got it around there now and won the closet. It's a nice coat.
Yeah.
Good material. But I've never used it.
Now, so this grove then never come on in time for you to make much out of it?
No, that's the truth about it. I sold the fruit off of it the first year we had it. I sold it to man O'Kella. I can't think of his name. I had a packing house there. And we got a pretty good price out of it. We had a nice crop on it that year. But right after that is when the cold hit it, you see. And it's been hit twice since then.
But now this grove down at the big grove.
McIntosh.
Yeah, McIntosh, the old Walker Grove.
That's right.
Now, you've got some pretty good fruit off of that.
Oh, yeah, the year that 57 freeze, it picked 22,000 boxes. 22,000, and we must have left at least 3,000 or 4,000 right on the ground. I sold it to Buddy Huff that year, the fruit. $1.25, he paid me around pretty close to $27,000 for the fruit on it that year.
He wouldn't take that on the ground, huh?
It was already rotted, Dave. It's been this long, you see, they couldn't use it. And we had several good years on that grove, too. And I sold it in bulk there one year for $20,000. And we had several good years on it. And I bought that new one, 301. I paid $39,000 for it.
So that didn't pay itself out?
Oh, yeah. It
and you made
anything.
Money on it.
And
how'd you happen to get into that, Mr. Garrigan?
Well, we were over that Sutter, you know, and there's 3 or 4 packing houses there, and I had some good friends, Mr. Dupree and the Crosbys over there, which were all related. And then Maxie Fruit Company from down about Winter Haven, they had a big plant over there. And I knew nearly all those men, you know.
So you
run that little
kind of had one foot in.
Yeah, and we decided we'd go ahead and try it, and I talked to them about it, you know, and naturally they told me what they knew about it, which you might say is about all too, because they're real grown men.
Yeah.
And so we decided we'd go ahead and get into it lightly, and that's what we did. Now, when we bought this down at McIntosh, I knew what it was going to have to sell for. Old man Walker told me, he said it's going to have to bring around $60,000, Joe. Well, I say you can just mark me off. He said, well, it's going to sell on the 19th of October, 2015. And Ollie, she got up that morning and said, Joe, go on up there and bid on it. Well, we had pretty good little savings and different savings banks around. But the bulk of it was up there at Federal Loan in Gainesville. And old man Joe Jenkins was the head man up there. And so I took a long shot and went up there that morning. They were supposed to sell that day at 11 o'clock. And I went up there and went way back there in his office. You know, I'd never met the old man. I went back there and I said, Mr. Jenkins. No, he looked at me. He said, what you want? He said, what can I do for you? Talk kind of rough. I said, well, Mr. Jenkins, I said, I come up here to borrow a little money. I said, that Belt Road will sell down there at McIntosh today, and I want to buy it. I said, I want to borrow $35,000. Boy, he just hollered. Now, that's the truth if I ever told a lie. And he says, when do you want it? Well, I said, I got to have it right now if I'm going to get it and use it. I said, it's going to sell in the next 2 hours. He said, I'll be darned if you ain't got no confidence in yourself and any man I ever saw. He said, you've never seen me and I've never seen you. And he said, you run here telling me that you want it.
He said, you got to have it right now.
I said, well, now that is that in the 2-5 hope I'll drop, right?
Yeah.
I said, well, Mr. Jenkins, I'll be honest. I didn't expect to get it when I came up here. But I said, I just took a wild chance on it. I said, I don't mind telling you. I'm telling you about it. We had $31,000 on savings there at that one bank. And we had some more in 2 or 3 more banks.
You mean in his bank?
Yeah. And
but you didn't know him?
No, I never met him. He never come up to the front. And so directly the old man kind of quieted down. He grabbed up a pencil and he began to figure. And he said, well, Gary, he says, if I let you have that money. He said, the interest and all, he said, first year you'd owe me around $38,000 at least. He said, you know, that's a lot of money. I said, yes, it is. He says, you got any security? I says, yeah. We'd already bought this place. I mentioned this one. I says, we got our home and property over at Citra. We were still living there. And I had another grove out on the other side of Oak County. Nice grove, about 8 acres. And I said, I'll give you a lien against all that if you let me have it, Mr. Jenkins. He said, well, I'll tell you. He says, banks don't like to take Citra's property as security. He says, on account of that coal risk. And I knew it, too. I thought maybe he'd overlook it. But anyway, the old man, he got to figuring around and directly looked at me and said, now let me tell you one thing. He says, you go back to McIntosh. He says, you place your bid. He says, if you get it, say you can just rest assured you can come on back up here and I'll let you have it.
Yeah, is that right?
And so I come back down there. McLeod Fruit Company, they were supposed to bid on it. And we kept waiting around Buddy's office there, you know, for McLeod to come in. And he didn't show up. And that's why Mr. Walker said, I'm getting hungry. He said, it's about 12 o'clock. He said, let's go here in the office, Buddy. And let's rattle that thing off. Buddy bid $50,000 on it. And they had received a bid from a man up in Atlanta, a man by the name of Howell, that sent in a bid there for $60,000, a seal bid. And I handed him a sealed bid for $61,000.
Why, Mr. Garrett?
That's the truth if I ever told it in my life. And the old man woke up opening and said, well, Gary, he said, you get it. Buddy said, I wouldn't go over $50,000 on it. He just wrote his out on a piece of paper. It was right there in his office. And but if I ever got a break in life, here's where it comes. After the sale was over, Mr. Walker said, let's walk out there to the car. I want to show you something. He and old man Belk were first cousins. He got a letter out of the pocket of his car and says, read this. And he had just got that letter from Mr. Belk, who was on his deathbed at that time. And he had dictated a letter to his stenographer, or secretary, telling Mr. Walker not to sell that gold for cash. He says, take 50% and make notes for the balance.
Why, Mr.
That's the truth if I ever told it.
Mr. Gary.
I said, well, that's all right. I said, I won't have to go to Mr. Jenkins then.
Well, I'll swear to goodness.
Because I already had the money, don't you see?
Yeah.
And so we just used our own money to pay it off. Of course, I thank Mr. Jenkins because it hadn't happened that way. I'd have had to go up there and call him. The old man had a son out in California
Well, they didn't.
At that time, and he went out there to visit his son and died while he's out there.
Well,
It's a funny thing about that darn thing. Before we completed the papers, Mr. Belt died.
Yeah.
Well, you might say he was dead then, you might say. And one afternoon, just about sundown, Mr. Walker got his little old mowing machine out and started cutting the grass on the yard. He toppled over. I told all I was afraid to make a move.
At that time?
Yeah. Yeah, all three.
And that was in 50.
That was in 50.
The fall of 1950.
Uh-huh. And we went ahead and made, I think it was $5,000 payments to cover that thing. Give them a mortgage on it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was due on the 19th of October in 19... Well, I guess about 55 or 56, you see. And I've always been one. I just didn't like to be tied up. I don't want to owe anybody. Don't care too much about them owing me, tell you the truth. And on my birthday, which is the 5th of February, I says to Ollie, I said, listen, we got to pay that thing over. I said, listen.
When was that?
On the 5th of February in 1955, I guess,
yeah.
4 or 5 years later. I said, let's just send them a check for it and clear that mortgage and get through with it. And we sent it in up there at Charlotte, North Carolina. That's where Mr. Belt landed. We sent it up there and paid it off. I paid it off from February to October, ahead of time, don't you see it? I just wanted to get it out.
You just didn't want to be...
I didn't want to owe it.
That
I had all the words to it. I just wanted to pay it off.
People live with that now. They just live on debt, you know. They thrive on it.
The
finances, I don't know what the words are.
Mr. Miles, let me tell you one thing. Dan, Dave, listen to this. When we came to Florida in 36, we didn't have a hard thing but a bare back and a hard head, me and all. We ain't got much more now. But when we come down here, I just bought a little old 34 Ford from the Newton Motor Company at Newton, Texas. You know where that is.
Oh, yeah.
And we had just paid that thing out, and we got down here. And that is the last piece of machinery. Automobile, truck, tractor, farm implement of any kind that I have bought on terms. Ever automobile, ever
1934.
Truck.
1934, now that's right in the middle of the Depression.
Yeah, ever tractor that I've bought, when I rolled it out, they got the money for it. Now that's the truth about it. You take my fertilizer bills, I pay them all. For the last 2 or 3 years, I've just gone in down at the seed stores, Seminoles. I'll be honest with you, the reason I did that, of course, I didn't want to pay it all out and to the government. I'll be honest with you about that. See, I kept books for one concern pretty good while, and I had little knowledge of that. And for the last 2 or 3 years, we went down there and just, long before we made our income tax, just put down $5,000 there to seed people, fertilizer people. I chose out against my operations that year and saved that way. And they got some good little business out of us, tell you the truth about it. They never did have to hunt me up for their money out there.
Oh, and you've been in the management side of it too, in the bookkeeping, and kept track of those things.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. I know you don't know what turpentine is. Mr. Monk, you know, I was out there in Louisiana, east from right out there about all at home. I kept books for one of the biggest turpentine companies that was ever organized, Gilligan and Chipley. The headquarters was in Lake Charles in New Orleans. I kept books for them 17 years.
That's before you come over here?
Before I came down here. And I came down here to take a job out here at Fort McCoy for a concern over there. Kept books there 3 years for them. And
same business?
Turpentine business, yeah, but not the same company.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on the last camp that the company had out there in Louisiana, right there at all at home, when we came to Florida. It worked out back there. There's some of them up there out from Valdosta up in there now.
Well, now, was that just office work?
Office and merchandising, too.
Yeah.
Boy, let me tell you another thing. I doubt very seriously that there's a man in the state of Florida, Georgia, or anywhere else around here that has paid off as many niggers as I have.
Is that right?
Now, that's the truth.
I have no idea that.
That's the truth, Dave. A lot of those camps I was on had 300 and 400 head of niggers on it.
Yeah.
That's about all they worked, you see, except the foreman.
Yeah.
And I kept books around the store and done the shipping of the turpentine and Norton building.
So you just knew all them little turpentine camps.
Yeah.
All them cabins and
well, you
houses
take,
back in there.
Yeah. Gilly and Chipley had, they had business in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, and the two Carolinas. But, you know, they're about out of all that now. The timber is played out, you see, and another thing, different things came along and replaced the turpentine and rosin, don't you
see? Yeah.
For instance, we used to sell a whirl of turpentine and rosin to Colgate, Palmolive, Pete, soap people, you know. I've built out a menu carload of it to them, going to Jeffersonville, Indiana,
mm-hmm.
Detroit, Royal Oak,
mm-hmm.
right over there where they're fighting now. I've built it out right, going right over there to Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
You ship it across the water, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The company had a big storage grounds down there just above New Orleans, a little place called West Wego,
mm-hmm.
and they used to move it down there and store it, you see, and load it on the ship from there, don't you see?
I got one more question I want to ask you. Let me check in.
Been there about 2 years, Coda. And all it needs is some fluid in it. And it's caught just like that. Been covered up all that time. What do you want to ask me?
The only story I know about you, Mr. Gag, all I know is when you come in down there to get the paper. But I was... You know, there's nothing important about that,
uh-huh.
but it's right curious, and I had just laid off to ask you about that.
That I had a bushel basket of quarters in that?
Yeah.
No, it must have been somebody else. No, because our transaction was two checks. Uh-huh.
I wonder now, what that could have been. That's the only thing I know. She called your name.
Uh-huh.
And they don't tell what kind of a tale she heard about it.
Well, now that's true, too.
I had a first cousin come to me one time wanting to borrow $2,000.
Uh-huh.
And I'd been saving quarters for years. In fact, I had a bunch of slot machines, and I'd save these quarters.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, I says, Dick, how much you want to borrow? He said, I want to borrow $2,000. Well, I went in the safe and counted them quarters out, and I had 2,100 rolls.
Uh-huh.
So, 210 rolls.
Uh-huh.
And I gave him $2,000 in quarters. That was damn near half a bushel.
Yeah. Well, now, I'll tell you what happened over that citron. Years ago, right, this all happened before we got there. There was an old man there by the name of Douglas who run a little store out there, kind of back of town. And it burned. Caught fire there one day and burned. And they told me, and I believe it because I was told about it by some responsible people, you know, that you don't have any right to question, said that the old man absolutely had a nail keg full of pennies. You know, years ago, people didn't use pennies much. Said you get a hold of a penny, well, said he had a nail keg set under the counter. He said he just threw those pennies down in that nail keg. And he said he saved those pennies. He said he got them out of there. He said he absolutely had a nail case full of them things. I don't know what he ever did with them. His name was Douglas. Yes, sir.
Well, I'll ask Annette about that. I could have got it wrong, you know.
Uh-huh.
But see, it was...
No, it might have been... You know, this place here changed hands several times. Old man Jack Richardson built it, and he kept it on a pretty good while.
Oh, it's the Grove down there.
Oh, yeah, the Grove. Uh-huh. Now, I don't know.
Because that was in her family, you know.
I bought it.
Or at least her sister.
I bought it from old man Belk, and he planned it out. And I don't think he ever owned it before then. No, sir.
What did the Smith boys, how much labor did you have on this house?
Dave, I'm going to tell you the truth. We had enough, but if I had to tell you, I swear I couldn't. They worked up here about at least 2 months. As it was the three Smith boys, and you know these colored carpenters over there?
Yeah.
Keel boys.
Yeah.
You know they're good carpenters?
They must be.
They're good carpenters. Don't be misled about it. And then another man from down about McIntosh, I can't think of his name. And then they used two or three just... I guess you'd call them extra helpers around doing odd jobs. And they worked up here, at least 2 months. And I'll just kind of give you an idea. Those Smith boys, they were getting around $4 an hour. And the Gills were, too. in this common labor, if you want to class it, that they were getting around $8 a day, you see. They shouldn't run into money out there. It shook us up pretty bad, I swear it did. But we finally got over it. Libby, come out the man's calling. Yes, sir. But they do pretty good work. There's no question
about it. They've done some good work.
Yeah, they do pretty good work. They do a lot of work for Ben Franklin. During that time, they stopped once or twice to go over there and do some special job for Ben. He's always putting in new machinery.
Mr. Gallagher, what can a fella like Freddie do in order to sort of get along?
Besides farming?
Well, something allied kin to farming. Now, Grove's getting so costly.
I wouldn't advise him to go into Grove's. Now, you might say that's one reason that I'm wanting to get out of that and two or three others. One is I'm getting too old, fool with them, and I know I'm not here for many more days, Mr. Miles, I know that. And I do a few days of my own, and we decided we'd get rid of them. And the coal is another thing. And then the prices of citrus is not what it used to be. Now, you just listen to what I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, tell me.
A lot of these high shots and big shots will get up in these flowery speeches that I can't make what the citrus is going to do in the near future, so on and so forth. You take Buddy down there, one of the smartest in the game today. He's chairman of the Citrus Commission, you know that,
yeah.
And he's making a good job of it. He's a smart man, no question about it. He's just kind of a self-made man. And but Buddy, he seems to have a bright view on it. He keeps putting out Grove and all, you see. And Minute Maid down there, they're putting them out right along, don't you see?
Sure.
And every year, they're just scared to death that we won't get anything out of the fruit, which we don't get a great deal. But still, they'll go out there and they'll plant these groves out. Like I told somebody a while back, was talking about bringing the price up. I said, well, it seems to me like about the best thing in the world to do. It's just go ahead and plant more orange trees. So I just kind of slurring at him, you know, my way coming back at him. Because that's what they were doing, don't you see? It seemed like they figured, well, the more you raise, well, the better the price will be. But it's just the opposite. And right now, the estimate is 134 million boxes, and we're going to have another estimate on the 12th of December. They might go up another 4 million boxes. You can't tell. Well, you know, yeah, about 2 years ago, we had close to 200 million boxes of oranges alone. Not saying anything about tangerines and grapefruit and tangelos and stuff like that. Just oranges alone. And we've got to consider that we're not the only ones that's raising citrus. You take Arizona way down there in the southern tip. Dave, I mean, you've seen some of it down there, haven't you?
Down where?
Down the southern tip of Arizona. You know, they raise nice fruit down in there, not as much as we do.
They're down around Yuma in there. That's all new.
Yeah. Texas has got a pretty good little output. All right. California comes second, you see. And Spain and all those countries over there. You've heard of the Valencia, haven't you? Valencia orange? It's a late variety here. But it takes its name from Valencia, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a world of fruit,
so
too.
So all Freddie can do is got to get a job with somebody that's got to grow.
Well, unless he wants to step out and buy some himself and get into it. Now, Fred is pretty thrifty. He knows how to work, and he'd get out there and maybe do like I did. For instance, you take this here, Mr. Miles, I doubt if I've spent $100 for labor. And I've got two tractors, and I kept my groves pretty well tracted up. And
oh, you mean you rode
your
tractors
myself? I did it myself. I got yonder's one of them, and the other's over on 301. Of course, the other two groves need some pruning now, and I was going to do it. But when this man came along and wanted to buy them, I knew that I was giving them to him at a pretty nice price as far as his concerned. In other words, I could have gotten more for him, you see. And in view of the fact that I was doing that, I thought, well, now he can go ahead and prune them, you see. In other words, I wasn't going to get out there and prune them after I'd sold them to him. But considering the price that he got them for, he could go ahead and have them pruned, and he's going to. And I intend to help the man. I don't know I'll even charge him a penny. I told him I'd get a couple of three good men and go out there and prune them and grow it out for him. And I might charge him a little something for the use of my truck, something like that, but as far as just hiring out to him, I don't suppose I'll charge him anything, and he wants me to do it, so I'm going to do it.
Mr. Gallagher, take your walk-up grove down there. Is that in as good a shape now as it was when you got
it? No, sir, it's not. And let me tell you another thing, Mr. Miles. Yeah, anything in the world, I tell you, I'm just as honest and sincere about it as I can be. I'm not going to misrepresent anything to you one way or another. I don't give a darn where the chips fall. Yeah, I don't think it ever will be. Because it's like me, age is against it, don't you see? It's been hit too many times mm-hmm. by these hard coals. Of course, you can go in there and work it over, pull out a lot of those old ones that's bad, you see, and replace them.
Yeah.
And then you don't know. It might be before these young trees come into production, they might experience a cold themselves and get knocked back, don't you see?
Mm-hmm.
It's all a gamble. And then on the other hand, why, you might come right along with them. But in other words, it ought to be reset in some spots. Now, you take Buddy, for instance. Buddy was lucky. Buddy, when he's just a boy, he worked for a man, Christian and Neil, down there. They were big produce people. He worked for them down there, and he gained quite a bit of experience in that line.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent him to either Central or South America. I don't remember which one of the two places. And he went down there as a representative, and he gained some more knowledge down there. He came back. He went in for Buddy. And he started branching out, and there was a man from out here in West Florida by the name of Hull. I'll tell you where the grove is. You know where the dumps is down at McIntosh?
Mm-hmm.
Out there on the west side of my place? But you know Buddy's got a big grove out west of the dumps out there? Well.
New grove?
Yeah, nice grove. Hell, come back. Come in here. Little bit. Come on in, son. And I guess he just turned it around. And this man Hall had that grove. And he wasn't getting along too well with it. And he says to Buddy, he says, Buddy, he says, you want that grove? He says, well, I'd like to have it done. In Alabama. He says, take it and work it out. So Buddy latched onto it. And I was told that he absolutely got enough fruit off of it that first year to pay the thing out. And it's one of the best groves in the country now.
Well, I miss
that's the truth. And he just got a foothold on it and got started, and he kept putting them out. And he's made a lot of money out of the produce. And I'll tell you another thing you might have heard and you might not. But up until about 4 years ago, Buddy Huff was the second biggest watermelon broker in the world. Not the United States, but the world. And he may be the biggest now, I don't know.
Mm.
He's out the produce business. He got out of that. He went out of it last year. He wrote all of his customers a letter and told them that he was not going to handle it. That's why another market.
Mm-hmm.
But he sure is moving the watermelons each year. Runs them over that belt down there.
Yeah. So, in citrus now, when I say Freddie, I mean some young fella
yep.
coming along who knows how to work.
Uh-huh.
They're not much for him. Unless he wants to get in finance and speculate a right spot.
That's
it's
right.
not. And then it's going to be so big he can't hardly compete.
That's right. I don't know if Freddie hadn't got about as good a combination as he's going to be able to work up to with those cows and what farming he's doing there. You know, he's pretty lucky with watermelons. You know
yeah,
that. You
yeah.
know that. And he's lucky with that eggplant deal.
Yeah.
He knows those two. And they've got those cows. Of course, I don't know what the situation is between he and his daddy on the cows, but I just assume that maybe 50-50 or something like that, you see. And Fred is hard worker. He can do a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mind it. And I don't know but what that might be as good as he could do.
Just hold on to what he's got?
Yeah, hold on to what he's got there. he does pretty good with it. And they've gone ahead and bought some sprinkling system there, you see,
mm-hmm.
that they can
mm-hmm.
water and irrigate whenever they want to. And I guess that'd be about as good as it.
Mr. Martin?
If it wasn't for every time you turn around.
Cost you money?
No. It costs. Yeah, it does that too. If I turn twice, it costs me twice. But let me tell you another thing. If it wasn't for these holdups that we have all over the country now, I'd open me up in that little grocery business somewhere.
Is that right?
I'd absolutely do it. I wouldn't try to compete with the big stores or anything like that because a man's silly to do it.
Yeah.
But
well?
I don't say it boasting, but I absolutely believe I could open up a little business of some kind out here on this road and
all
do
right.
pretty good with it. But I'd never know just when some fella's going to poke a gun in my rib.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, now that's remarkable. This is around 5:20, Channel 1 over. And this is the end of that rather short but rich visit on Sunday afternoon, the 17th of November, 1968, with Mr. Gallagher and his wife's relative, I think it was, Mr. Monk from Louisiana. And Mr. Monk, when after a few things he said, sounded like he was a man with experience, too. There's nothing like it. You see, they are in business for themselves, and that opens their mind. That opens their mind to what goes on. There's just no two ways about that. I noticed the boy from Eli Witt in Fred. Their talk was, just commonplace. Now, this is Thursday afternoon, the 21st of November, 1968, and this is about 5:40, Channel 1 over, Channel 1 over. And this is just passing by from Mr. Morganson's, and I went in, and they were eating supper. Mr. Gallagher was eating a waffle that Ms. Gallagher was cooking, or else heating up, in the toaster. Maybe she had them cooked and got them out of the freezer and was warming them up and toasting them in the toaster. And we had some scattered talk, nothing at all like Sunday afternoon. I opened it with the last remark, and I thought he'd pick it up, but he never did. That he would, if he would start in business right now with a little grocery business right out there.
Hold up.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, now, how would you figure that?
Well, that's the matter. There's quite a bit of traffic over this road now.
Yeah.
A lot of folks going in here to cross the street and go in fishing.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks travel through here that don't even go to cross the street to fish. And you know, they come out in the country that way and see a little country store. The more people stop there, the more in the eye of this. That's true.
Uh-huh.
And that's the reason I said that if I was going to go into anything, which I'm not.
I'm in your way.
I would just as soon as you go into that, we had a little store there in Texas for about 17 years. And then I worked for one concern out in Louisiana and Texas for 17 years out there.
Yeah.
I kept books and operated a commissary for them out there and paymaster on don't you want one of these?
Oh, no. No, I gotta wait for faith. Yeah, come on. But now, don't you? You know I'm saved. Sitting here.
No, you mustn't feel like that.
Well, that's the thing of it, though. He feels at home in that little commissary, Mr.
Yeah, I do.
Uh-huh.
It's like I said the other day. I know a man in one man in the state of Florida that's paid off as many other people as I have.
Yeah.
I'd put my record up against most anybody because I paid off a lot of them and I know them pretty well. And I don't know, we stayed in it so doggone long to avoid it, got well wore out at it. See, we had our own over there for about 17 years.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You ought to have had enough of.
He'd get tired of it.
Tired of it again. But I'm not as young now as I used to be, Mr. Miles, and you're not either. Nobody is for that matter. But all of it together, I wouldn't want to try. But I'll be honest with you, I know I'm going to miss my few little cows. I realize that. And
how would you make it on the store? You see, I've never had a store. I've never been in on that. I just don't know hardly how they pay off. And you say grocery.
I carry just kind of a general line.
Yeah,
grocery,
yeah.
Meat. We even had gasoline.
Yeah.
We sold as high as 80,000 gallons of gasoline in 1 year. And that's a pretty good amount of gasoline, you see.
Yeah.
A combination business.
Yeah.
We had standard gasoline. And, you know, they have the greatest courtesy toward business of any gasoline company in the world. At least they did at that time. And I might not still have, tell you the truth. And you get a lot of these courtesy cards.
Oh, I see.
I got three right here now. I got one on Shell, I got one on Gulf, and one on Standard.
Yeah.
And most of our gas, we just buy it on courtesy cards.
You just buy it on courtesy cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been kind of thinking about coming up there and go to work in the university if I can get on.
You get tired of that person.
Much overhead, all in that. You stayed there about 17 years, and I bet you I didn't spend. I don't suppose I spent $200 for help the whole time we were there. We did it all.
I can't understand that. And then on your grove here, you've been doing most of your work on your grove. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looks like just higher done. Everything you can higher done, just higher done.
Well, I guess we should have hired more of it done. I guess the roads might be in a little bit better shape if we had. But we didn't do it, and reserve was it. We paid in a lot of it to the government, you see. We could have saved if we'd have went ahead and hired out some. But this labor's kind of hard to get along with now. It's kind of hard to get in it. And you take this year out on the land, you spend over $100.
Well, I tell you, when I come out there in the country,
he works just like you do.
He don't have to.
But they don't do that.
Wear himself out.
There's too much government interference there, you see. The government's taking care of so many of them. So,
yeah.
In reality, they don't have to do it. Now, I guarantee you that you can say, Saturday, you go down here to Boardman and make arrangements with two men to go to work for you Monday.
And they won't show up.
And the chances are that they both might have to go to Ocala and Janesville. But I guarantee you that one of them will have to go.
Uh-huh.
He has got to go to town.
Yeah.
That's always been my luck. It happened to me not over 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I had a couple working for me on 301. And I got through over there while I told them to come up here. I'm going to hold these little trees here the following Monday. I got to cut up here. One of them came up Monday morning and then had to go to Ocala. And that's just the way it was. And it just worked out pretty much that way.
How'd you keep your books clear on the store, Mr. Gallagher?
How you mean?
We didn't do much book work, did you?
We didn't do.
You didn't write that much.
I did what was done.
She did
it wasn't too much. We just done the best we could. The same way as the Groves. We
Well,
you take after these free just when we had to work so much help. I did the book work, but I tell you the way we got our groves pruned out and everything, I stayed out there with them. I just took the labor and went out there and stayed with them.
Stayed out there with them.
And so we just never did. We didn't keep no
room. You think she got patience?
She got more than I.
Jill
ain't
got it. That's
when
I had to do it.
We both stayed out there. And,
but I was there all the time. Jill was in and out. But I had 35 colored people working with me. And to get a colored man to work, or people, I had colored men and women. You just have to get out there. And I worked right along with them and just kept them going. And you can't just get out there and say, well, now you go ahead and do so and so.
You can't leave it up to
you. You just got to be out there with them.
Yeah. They don't have, don't let them have to make any decisions.
Mm-hmm.
What I really meant was in the credit when you're running your store.
Well,
how did you keep
we
going
get
home?
A little credit. That was one thing I was pretty good at collecting, and we wound up there with you might say no outside debts at all. Tell you the truth about it, I don't suppose we lost over $200 or $300 the whole time we did. Did we lose that much?
We have a lot on the books.
Oh,
we
always
manage to collect.
Well, how you doing, Mr.
Gallagher? Well, I tell you the truth, I cussed and I begged and I fought. I use those three methods. Now, that's the honest truth. And
people back then
were
making good money during the war,
and
it wasn't
somebody else. I don't know. They were a little bit better about paying than they are now. And another thing, Mr. Miles, we didn't have all these big chain stores we've got now, you see. They come along and put the little fella out of business, you see.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing much to the country store now. Everybody
goes
to the chain store to buy.
But we did pretty good with it. Used to hold.
But your collection. Now, you know the
other thing, Mr. Miles, I suppose everybody has a different method of collecting, you know. Some will use one method of collecting, and that man will use another. But it's the truth. I always say the same thing. I begged and I fought and I cursed. I swear I did. and I've had a few of them to the small claims court, but that is about the sorriest thing that ever hit the country. If you owe me $15 and don't want to pay it, I'd go out here and turn it over to the small claims court, all right, instead of having $15. $15. I've got 17 because it cost $2 to bring him before the court, you see.
Yeah.
And not about half of them ever show up, tell you the truth, man.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, about half of them show up.
They don't even show up when they're...
No, a lot of them do. Don't. Some come in, of course, but not too many of them. Of course, you can follow him to his job and garnish his part of his wages, but Lord have mercy. He finds out you're going to do that, well, he'll quit and go somewhere else and just worry the life out of you that way.
Yeah.
John Palmer, down here at Reddick, you know him?
Yeah.
Well, John told me about taking 17 to small claims court at one time down there. And I said, well, John, that's just $34 more than you had in the accounts, I guess. He said, that's just about what it amounted to.
Yeah.
Old John Thomas was one of them, Molly. You remember him, that old short John.
Well, you know, the way I figured the small claims court, it would take so much of your time to go through that.
That's right.
Because you can't put it in and just go on about your business. You've got to be there. Mm-hmm.
And these little judges that they have, small claims court judges, they don't make much effort to collect
until
you get back. Yeah. I think it'll eventually just finally play out if it hadn't already done.
Yeah.
I don't hear too much about it then.
You know, the word gets around, you know, that they don't work. Nobody pay much attention to it. The only thing that makes them work is respectful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't got that, you might as well just go home in the first place.
We've been out working in the grove all afternoon.
We just come in when you got here. We just beat you in there about 5 minutes.
And the old commissary.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of work. You got to keep your stock up.
Yeah. Now, I worked for one company out there in Louisiana about 17 years. The Gilligan Chipley Nail Stores company last term time. And I kept books from the store, paid off. Then the shipping of the turpentine and rolled and down and out, you know, over the railroads. And we got crew up there, out on the last camp that the company had out there, right there at all at home. And it was during the Depression. Times got kind of tight and they cut wages. Kept cutting wages and finally started cutting me off. And I got cut off out there, and that's why we came to Florida. To tell you the truth, I worked over here at Fort McCoy about 3 years and during the Depression, and about all it did was just keep life and body together. Wasn't much work to it and wasn't much pay.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get a job anywhere else, and so that was. So after 3 years, well, they cut off some in order to cut expenses, and that's when we went in here to Citroen opened up that little grocery store there.
Oh.
We rented a little building there from the Sinclair agency out there at Ocala. Mr. Perkins and Kemp had the agency there. And they had this building on the lease. And we went ahead and paid rent on it for about 3 years, and then the property came up for sale. And we wanted to buy it, but didn't have enough money to buy it with. And Mr. Kemp, head manager Sinclair out there, he told me he'd let me have enough money to buy it, but he talked so fast and tied me up so quick until I started gasping for breath. He just did it like that, and so let me there for just a minute. I didn't know what to say, but I told him, well, I'd think it over. But I knew I would. In other words, what he wanted me to do, he said he'd loan me the money. I think it was, I don't remember how much now, it'd been so long. It wasn't in a big amount, maybe $2,000. And he said, you take out $2,500 policy on the building and you keep it up and make it payable to me. And he said, I'll let you have it. I think he said 6% interest and something else. And I knew I didn't want to do that. But Ollie's got a brother out in Louisiana and still living. I guess he had about as much money as Mr. Kemp's dead now. He was a good old man. So I told Ollie, I said, right, Isaac, and ask him, let us have $600. He will, and we'll use what little bit we've got, and we'll buy it. So we went ahead and did that.
And in about 3 or 4 months, five or something like that. Well, we sent Isaac his money back. He didn't charge anything.
Yeah.
And
what did you make the most at in the store, Mr. Guy?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell. We sold a few dry goods along, that is, work clothes and
shoes,
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really, I guess there's a greater margin of profit on them than was grocers.
Yeah.
And gasoline. Of course, you make pretty good
we
on the
we had anything you wanted. We had drugs.
Most
we had,
anything.
We did a lot of candy business, sweets, drinks, ice cream. We
milk,
did anything you could think of in that little old store.
All right.
I'm going to be honest with you. It wasn't much bigger than our kitchen here. I could almost jump across it.
Oh, really?
That's the truth. We had a good refrigerator. We got a good meat box, nice ice cream box and all, you know. And we cashed a lot of checks. Everybody around there would come running up there for us to cash checks. And of course, that kind of helped us out that week. They got, some of them would come in there, you know, may want to get a check. And come in, well, is the bank open? I got a check and I'm going to get cashed.
Yeah.
And a little song like that made up.
But that's for this hold-up stuff started,
yes.
Or this shooting stuff started.
Mr. Mine, I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of times. We had $8,000 and $10,000 sitting down under the shelf there in one of these little old cans, you know.
Oh, really?
With a cover on it and a bale, whatever you call it. And that was our safe.
Is that right?
And you could come in there and buy anything, we had to make change. Well, cash check, a lot of times we'd have to go right to that drum and get it. You know where it was, and everybody else did.
Well,
but I swear, we never was bothered one way or another, tell you the truth. But most of the time, we slept right back at the store there. We had a two-story building there. And after about 5 or 6 years, we moved into it because we sold the other house up there to a man from Ohio.
The best time, if you open
up
a store now, the best thing would be one of these
minute
stores.
Yeah, these little minute stores.
But you wouldn't, would you own it yourself?
Well, it's a kind of a chain. I don't know just what the setup is. Now, this fellow.
You can open up one, call it whatever you want to.
You
it wouldn't have to be
name
named
that.
You just buy from them?
No. What I mean, you can open up a small store like that and call it whatever you
want
to call it.
You
wouldn't have to be a
minute
store. You can just. You can.
Well, Ms. Gerger, the thing of it is with that is they have. Stuff comes in there today and it's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see over here at Mr. Thacker's, he doesn't have a quick turnover.
No. Mm-mm. A lot of times it doesn't fresh.
Well, if you wanted to do that, you'd open it up and you'd go and get stuff. You'd buy it direct from the wholesale houses.
We hold a lot of that.
Or have them to deliver to you.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
these little mini stores are owned by a man I had in Jacksonville. A fellow by the name of Jackson owns them.
Yeah.
And a man I carried Ocala. He established what was known as a certified wholesale grocers.
Yeah.
One of the biggest outfits in the country now. But when he started that to organize that, he was working for his dad in the store out there at Ocala. And I guess we were one of the first that he came out there and wanted to know if we go ahead and go in there.
Uh-huh.
And how at all you buy that and stuff?
You put in I think it was $1,000.
I think about $1,000.
Or $2,000 or $3,000 then.
Whatever you wanted to.
And you get the stuff cheap, you know. What I mean, cheaper than you would if you went out and bought it from another regular wholesale people by having stock in there.
And then he'd come by every day,
Yeah, they delivered once a week.
But we didn't join up with them. I'll tell you why. We were wanting to get rid of the little store, and I guess we'd have had to buy a truck in addition to joining them, see.
They wasn't delivering it.
They wasn't delivering at that time.
You'd go by and pick it up.
Pick it up. And I didn't want to buy a truck, and I wanted to, you know, get out of the store business. So for that reason, we didn't join it. But it's a big thing now, and the man that organized it was named Hal. What was his other name? Hal?
Dave.
No, not
David.
Lively. Hal Lively. That man, he just worked from here about 3 or 4 months ago. He was sitting down talking to a man up, and he just
and he wasn't but 51 years old. Just worked himself to death. But he, their warehouse, I'm not lying to you, it's as long as me and my barn down yonder, you know about where that is. They got the railroad track right up to it, and they do a world of business.
You can haul your own grocery if you wanted to. You can have somebody go and bring it for you. And as for the a lot of the stuff now, the bread trucks, they come, they deliver, the cook up the drinks and all that. That's all delivered by the people that handle that, you know.
Well, Fred has trouble getting his bread a lot of times.
Well, we never had any trouble, tell you the truth, getting bread. We bought from Marita, we bought from Southern, and we bought from Dandy, wasn't it, Aunt? Dandy, we had three different breads there. And could have gotten one or two more, I guess, but I just didn't see any point.
This is Channel 1 over, the end of Channel 1 over, Thursday afternoon, late, 21st of November, 1968. The end of Channel 1 over, the visit with Mr. Garriga while he's eating waffles for supper on Thursday afternoon, the 21st of November, 1968. The end of Channel 1 over, the end of Channel 1 over, Thursday, the 21st of November, 1968. The end of the visit, Mr. Garriga, on Thursday, 21st of November, end of...